Hello listeners, and welcome to my last episode before maternity leave. I do plan to still release weekly episodes as I have a backlog of interviews, but these are already pre-recorded, so I won't be contactable for the next couple of months, but I will be around in September. I may periodically check my emails, so if there is anything urgent, then please feel free to continue reaching out, and I will get back to you when I can. And if you have 60 seconds spare today, please go and visit www.britishpodcastawards.com/vote to nominate the Cult Vault podcast for the Listener's Choice Award. Every single vote would be amazing, and I would be so grateful for the continued support of anybody listening who thinks that the podcast could get a little bit of recognition from the listeners. Today we're going to be talking to Syria, who is going to give us the final installment of Straightway, which is a group that we have covered before, but there is so much to go into here that I thought a female perspective would really enhance what we already know about this group. So without further ado, here is Syria. So hi Syria, and welcome to the show. Thank you so much for joining me today. We are going to be talking about a little place that some of the listeners may have become familiar with, especially from my interviews that I've done with Stefan and one that I released last week that was with Troy. And it's around a place called Straightway. So would you like to introduce yourself to the listeners and tell them a little bit about who you are?
Yes, my name is Syria. I am originally from North Texas, came down to South Texas, where the place is based, around the age of 8 years old, and been in the Houston area in Texas ever since. So, yeah.
And for those that haven't listened to the other episodes that we've recorded, what is Straightway?
It originally started like in the late 70s in Houston, Texas, as the pastor of the place. Him and his wife wanted to open up their home to people with any life-controlling substance, with alcohol abuse or drug addiction. I don't exactly remember the story. It's been a while since I've heard it, but supposedly they came across a woman and her child, and she was addicted to heroin, I believe. And so they were trying to call to get her in some kind of halfway house, and they couldn't get her anywhere in. And so just from there, they kind of wanted started opening their home to people with families, single, just whatever case it may be. They just wanted to help people. So when it first started, I think it maybe did start as maybe a good thing. It mainly started as a rehab place, and then grew from there, and they got a lot of people in there to where they moved outside of Houston, 45 minutes south of Houston in a small town, bought an old high school grounds and built trailers on it and just like made a campus out of it. There were dorms. They built dorms. They built a chapel. There's gymnasium, kitchen. So just think of like out in the middle of nowhere, surrounded by trailers, like... so that's how it started. And in its heyday, I would say like the most people, it probably was like 200 to 300. Wow. And that's when my family came, which was in the 90s, in the early 90s. And so it kind of grew from that. And yeah, that's kind of the origins of it.
And when you say it's like a rehabilitation program, this is a rehab program with religious association. Is that right?
Yeah, so it's slash rehab and then slash church. So a lot of people, what they would do is they would go through this year-long program and then feel like so grateful that their life has changed and become better that they would stay and become a part of the church and then serve, volunteer, and dedicate their life to this place.
Right, right, okay.
That's what a lot of people did.
And are people expected to pay for this year-long rehab program?
Yeah, yeah. So you pay a lot of times too, if you like, you know, cause some people didn't have the money and like you would get sponsors. So there were kind of known I guess sponsors that would also sponsor people that were going through the program.
Right.
But yes, you did have to pay like a monthly thing. I mean, you were living there, you were eating, and it lasted a little over a year. And then after a year, you went into this reentry part of it. It's where a lot of the times the students still stay during that time. So it was about a year and a half, maybe. It was definitely a longer program. Usually programs are about like a few months. So it just kind of grew from there. I don't think they're nearly at that capacity now. I don't think that they have that many people now, but.
Okay. And after you complete the program, there is the option for you to move into one of these trailers on the property and live there full time.
Yeah. Some people would get a trailer and then move it out there.
Okay.
Some people would build a house out there. There were a couple of houses that were built. It just kind of depended. Some people would buy somebody's trailer that was already there, but the majority of the people after the program part of it, they would stay. And so, yeah.
And you said you moved in the 90s when you were 8 years old. Yeah. Did you go with your mum and dad? Were there brothers and sisters?
Yes. So it was me, my younger sister, and my parents. My dad was addicted to everything. He was an alcoholic, did every kind of drug, real abusive towards my mother. So I heard the podcast with Stefan on it, teared up, of course, because just hearing his perspective and everything. But his family, like, he was born into it, so they didn't know a life prior. Me and my sister came at the age of 7 and 8, so I have vague memories of being somewhere else before this place.
Mm-hmm.
And some of them are pretty bad. I mean, my dad was abusive. He was, he went to this place to get help and to go through this program. So he went there, and then 2 months later, the rest of my family joined him. It was me, my younger sister, and my mom. And my mom decided to go through the program with them, even though she didn't have really any issues.
Okay, yeah.
So they went through the program, and then after they were done, pretty much stayed for the next 15 years. they just felt like, I mean, nothing else helped my dad, and then this place did. And I know also, too, it's like when you're surrounded by people that they're all kind of doing the same goal, out in the middle of nowhere, I mean, your life is going to change. Like, I feel like right now, the way I'm making it sound isn't that bad, but that's what they do is like,
yeah.
You know, a lot of cults, like when you originally get, I mean, you're drawn to something that's attractive and that's good and that helps people. And I think maybe on some level at some time, this place did, but it kind of, it just went to basically to shit.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, that's how my family got there.
And did your father have religious ties before moving out to this part of Texas? Is that part of what kind of drew him to this particular program?
Yeah. I mean, my parents, like I remember going to church prior to this place. And my dad was always like involved in the church. I remember him even playing. He's a musician. He would play the drums at the previous church. And then in the place now, he would play drums, guitar. We all got really involved in the church part of it. So.
Mm-hmm. So it wasn't like a big change of lifestyle in terms of going from non-religious practice to heavy kind of Christian values and services and stuff.
As in that aspect, not really. I mean, like it was like Christian-based, non-denominational.
Yeah.
So you kind of understood that part, but it definitely was different. yeah, I mean, I can get more into detail in just a minute, but just kind of explaining just the timeline of everything I mean, my dad was, you know, he was sober for almost 10 years when we were out there.
Mm-hmm.
So I think there was a good part where he was a good dad and he really tried to be the best parent he could be and best husband. But like my parents didn't really get along. I didn't want them to be married anymore. It was like just hell, like listening mm-hmm. to them. And this is all while we were at Straightway.
Okay.
And so, yeah. And then my dad, it was just weird. My dad ended up getting a job in Houston, which is, okay, so the place is 45 minutes south of Houston. He got a job in Houston making good money. So we lived in a trailer there. We ended up moving into a trailer on the grounds.
Okay.
So he got a job in Houston, paid really well. But we never like moved into like a nice house or anything. He basically like for a good while, like was giving money to the place. I don't know how much he gave. I know from time to time, I think it was like big amounts.
Right.
But that's what they would do. They would get families, anybody that made any kind of money that was like a little bit upper, they would get like, yeah, make you feel like you had to give everything.
And that was expected of most people that lived there, to kind of tithe and contribute financially on top of what you're already paying to be enrolled in the program.
Yeah. I mean, you have your basic things. So in basic churches, you have tithe and offering. So this place, they've ended up finding this thing called the first fruits. It actually is something in the Bible that's talked about, but basically what it is the beginning of the year, you give whatever amount you can, but it's like supposed to be like a big amount to where it almost hurts. It sounds weird. But, and then you're like, kind of like praying to God and asking God for something in return, whether it's like, man, I'm really shooting to like want a kid this year. I want to go to college. I want to just something along those lines.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, I mean, there were only a couple of families in the church who had that kind of money. Like a lot of the families there were not like, didn't have that much money, had a lot of kids and were giving all their money to something. And they couldn't even like eat, like mm-hmm. provide food for their family. Like it was just, and you had to do it. It wasn't like, oh, let's talk about this. Let's like, no, you, everybody, like, I will never forget. We like you, I don't know if you've ever been to a church service where you like go up for prayer after and like they pray for you and like, no,
no, I can't they, say like, that I their, have.
They like lay their hands on you and pray for you. And like, sometimes you're like, this is so funny, but sometimes you get like, they call it slain in the spirit. So you like fall down. And like, you're just like, yes, Jesus. And like, I got slain in the spirit, and I would fake it so many times. Like, oh, I just got, it sounds so weird and funny. But you would, whatever you were doing the first fruits, you would go up, get prayer. And like, I'm giving this amount, you would give your money and then they would pray for you. And like, it was this whole process or yeah. So just, oh my God, it's really funny just even thinking about the whole prayer part of the service and getting slain in the spirit. And then we had like something called like being drunk in the spirit. So, have you heard of any of this prayer?
I have, yeah. I was talking yesterday to when I spoke to Troy. For any listeners that are confused, I episodes come out weekly, but it was actually yesterday that I spoke to Troy. So,
okay.
So I spoke to him and he mentioned the Assemblies of God, which is a Pentecostal denomination of Christianity. So I assumed that Pentecostalism was involved when you mentioned elders trying to cast demons out of children. So speaking in tongues and being slain in the spirit and casting demons is something that we've covered in our Pentecostal coverage.
Okay.
But what examples can you give of elders who have kind of performed these acts?
This is really not funny, but I don't know why. Every time I talk about this, it makes me laugh. But even when you talk about it, it kind of sounds funny or may come across funny, but the actual events that happened were not that funny. So, for instance, one of my best friends I grew up with, and I just found this out this past year. I had no idea this ever happened. I was laughing at first when she told me, but then almost started tearing up. I was like, Raquel, why have you never really spoken of this? I don't remember this ever happening. Like, I mean, if we had to be like, she was probably around the age of 9 or 10, maybe. She said early teenager, so maybe 11, 12. And she developed like pretty early, like, you know. So We lived in apartments, outside, in a town next to that place for about a year. So we lived right next to each other. They had also bought these apartments, probably about 10 of them that were like in the next town over. So some people that were like also went into reentry or were still part of the church, they would move over there, which was still mm-hmm. part of it. Anyways, me and this friend I grew up with, we grew up like right next to each other for about a year. And she said that one time, one of the elders, I don't know if I should say this or not, but it was Stefan's dad. He was the co-pastor. I mean, he was like, you know, the second in command. Their family was the second. And came over and just, I don't remember exactly what she did to sin. I think she said she made out with a boy or something. And basically came over, and her mom was a single mom. So this would happen usually with like the single parents because mm-hmm. they didn't have like a husband to like discipline the children in that kind of way. I mean, the mom could, but I don't know why they. So he basically was like choking her and like trying to like rebuke the demons out because they thought she like had a demon in her because she made out with a boy.
Wow.
Okay. And like had her on the bed choking her, and her mom is like in the corner, and there's another lady there, I believe. Her mom is in the corner and just like, at one point I think was okay with it, but then after a while was not, and like, please get off. Like, it was starting to get to a level that was like, you know, he's choking her. Like, I mean, she's a little girl, you know? So that situation, I just found out this past year, I had never known. And there's like other situations like that I've found out after leaving that I just didn't know. And a lot of this stuff was never either talked about or you were told not to talk about it, and that right. Love forgives, and like it's covered under the blood of Christ, and the eldership will deal with it basically.
Okay.
And so that was like, so yeah, a lot of the kids, so she, I'm sure there may have been other times, but I don't want to say too much more about that just because that's her story and I don't really know the exact details of it.
Mm-hmm.
But there were other situations where that a lot of, like I said, a lot of the parents who were single parents and who had a couple of kids, if they, let's just say one of the boys, a young teenager, and he's doing what teenagers do. I don't even know exactly what, but like the elders, it was usually a guy would come over and would discipline them, would spank them. Mm-hmm. So back then spanking was like, I mean, nowadays you can't even talk about it. Like spanking back then, it was just a normal thing.
Yeah.
It's like, I got my ass whipped, man. Like you got a paddle, you got a switch, a belt, like, so they would just go and it was like, I don't know if some of the parents, some of the moms were just okay with it, or maybe they weren't okay with it, but were too scared to say anything. But that went on for quite a while. And thankfully it never happened with me or my sister, because my dad would just beat our ass, you know? So yeah, it was just like a normal thing to just get disciplined like that.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And it's justified by using the Bible, basically, like you just said, yeah. that you know, it's the work of Christ. You know, we're just carrying out actions on his behalf.
Yeah, basically. I mean, I think there's somewhere in the Bible where it talks about like disciplining your children with the rod or something.
Right.
So they would take, you know, they would take like the Bible and use it to their own gain, and like bits and parts where they want. I mean, if you really went exactly by the Bible, there are scriptures in there that talk about women should not have long hair. Mm. I mean, should not have short hair. They're not allowed to speak in church. Like there's so many things that like, if we did, like, if we really went to the T, we wouldn't be living our lives. Like, so yeah, it just seems like they pick and chose like what to really go by and all that.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And you mentioned briefly in before that there's Stefan's dad who was kind of like the second in command. So how would you talk about the family who are at the top of this, the man and woman who started this movement and this group?
Oh, The main pastor guy himself, I would say one word, crazy. I really think he needs to be in a mental institution. They think of them, they really think of themselves, their whole family. Well, not all of them, because a lot of his, like most of his kids have left there now.
Right.
They just think they are just like basically just the shit. And like what they say goes. And
right.
Do not go against their will. And if you question anything, you are like out of it. And it just, I mean, everybody just felt scared to ever say anything. I think maybe the only people that ever did were maybe some of the elders that were really close to the pastor himself.
Right.
But his wife, his first wife that he had like the seven kids with, because they have like seven, eight kids.
Right.
And his first wife lived there for a few years and then ended up having an affair with one of the people in the church. So it was this like big controversy and everything. And they ended up leaving the wife and the person she had the affair with. Like families were kind of split up. And then the pastor remarried a lady in the church who had two kids.
Okay.
And then they ended up, so all together they had like almost like 10 kids.
Right.
And most of the kids have left. They think that he's crazy too.
Okay.
And for them, it's a little different because it's like, that's still my family. And that's still, you know, that's still my dad or that's still my mom. And like, yeah, especially like the two stepkids, who one of them is just absolutely like beautiful, brilliant. She's not like, she knows what's going on, but she, mm-hmm, her mom is like stuck in a situation that she can't get out of. And I think she probably feels bad for her mom, who is the mm-hmm current pastor's wife there. And so they just have this very, like, what is the word? Like, not, just so egotistical. Is that mm-hmm the right word? Like, it's just whatever they say goes, and you mm-hmm serve them. You're at their beck and call. And, mm-hmm, my sister's first husband was the pastor's like right-hand guy for quite a while. Mm-hmm. So we kind of knew some of like the ins and out of how he was being treated and like, wow, having to get up like at all hours of the night and go buy alcohol or get people out of DWIs or just like, and we're like, what is going on here? This is getting weird. So yes, just nuts. I can go into like, how some of us started leaving and like what actually like got like, for instance, my attention of, man, things are starting to get weird here.
Mm-hmm.
Cause I feel like some of the stuff I said maybe kind of sounds a little good, but it really just, like I said, it's,
yeah. I think we've definitely got questions that go down the list. So okay. I think we're chronologically working through, your timeline, I think, as a basis of this, and I'll cut this bit out, but the people worked to actually build a house for the pastor and his family.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So part of the first fruits, part of it for a few, like the first few years when we started, like it became a thing and we started doing it, all of that went to building the pastor's home. So all the money that we gave that went to building his house. And then they used, I think this is right, they used some of the students that were in the program to actually build it.
Right.
Yeah. So that's pretty much like, we built his house, basically gave all of our money that we had. I mm-hmm made a good while. We were making like $50 a week, probably. So.
And all the major decisions that happen sort of within the grounds, they all go through this pastor as well.
Yeah. So if you had any kind of like, man, you were thinking about, I don't know what it, like you were thinking about moving off campus, you were thinking about going to college. I mean, even with like dating, you had to, not necessarily the pastor himself, but like you had to ask the eldership. I mean, we couldn't really date. Like, and if you did, you like you had asked permission. It was just very like, yeah, a lot of stuff had to go through. through them.
Yeah. And what about education? What did that look like for you and your sister?
Barely anything. we homeschooled, and well, from my group of people that were there, there was about seven of us girls who all are about the same age, and we all grew up together. We all homeschooled, and you were not allowed to go to the public school that was the next town over. The next town was about 10 minutes away.
Okay.
You were not allowed to do that. Like,
okay.
You had to homeschool. And then at one point they did try, this is funny, they did try to make a school within it, like with the kids that were there.
Yeah.
That lasted about a year. And then they used, so a lot of the parents homeschooled their kids. Like, for instance, my mom homeschooled me and my sister and then a friend of ours.
Okay.
And so a lot of the parents like became like a couple of like the teachers.
Okay.
But it didn't really work out. Nobody knew what the hell they were doing.
Yeah.
It was like, what is going on here?
So you would do like what, church-based learning, or would it be like,
we got regular curriculum that people use back then for homeschooling, because I learned like math and history and like just normal stuff.
Yeah.
But you know, we didn't have any what is it, like sports or like,
okay,
you know, all that kind of stuff that you get when you go to high school and all that.
Right. And and what happened as time went on? Did you enroll into any further education at all?
So I did a little bit of college. Oh, they got to a point where they found the freedom of the spirit.
Okay.
So the freedom of the spirit led into a couple things. One of them was, oh my God, we're going to let people go to school now.
Okay.
To like middle school and high school. Like, oh, it's like, it's such a big thing. So a lot of people then, we started going to college too, which there was the next town over had a big college, campus. Mm-hmm. And so I did a couple courses for like 6 months to a year. I was a little bit different. That's the only college I did, but my sister completed college, and there were a few other girls that did as well.
Okay.
And this was all kind of like also in the process of people starting to leave as well. So people were already kind of starting to not care as much as what the eldership thought.
Yeah.
And kind of, yeah. So
and what happened at the 18 month mark when your parents completed their program and it was time for you to either make the decision to stay or leave?
Man, I don't remember too much. Mm-hmm. I know they went into the reentry phase, which meant they had apartments, like these set of apartments that were in an upstairs area. Where couples, people that were married, they would come back together. Like they went through the program separate.
Yeah.
Like they were not living together. And you would come back together in like this apartment, and we were like a family. And that was for, I don't remember how long the reentry part was for, but I vaguely remember. Like, I just want to serve and change people's life. Like, my life was changed. So that's all I remember. I don't remember too much of that part.
Okay. I just got a little thing there saying my internet connection is unstable. So hopefully we'll be okay. But that was strange. So what did the average day and week look like for you in terms of, are you expected to go to church services, to the chapel? When you're not being homeschooled, are you given like tasks or jobs to complete? What does your life look like on this compound that's like really isolated?
Yeah, so it's a little, there's different parts to this, because you had to serve in the rehab part of it, which meant you had to do things like they had an office part of the place where you, people would come up when they first like would arrive and stuff. So you had to like, you had to like be at the office area doing like admin work, whether it was like answering phones or different stuff like that. And by like, we weren't getting paid for this stuff. And if we were, it was like barely anything.
Right.
And then you had to like, so for instance, girls that were going through the program, we had to come in and do like devotional stuff with them. And granted, at the time, we're like teenagers, like 16, 17. And these are women that have been through some shit in their lives. And they're looking at us as we're telling them, it made no sense. Like, they're having us do all this stuff. We're like, we haven't even been through. I mean, yeah, when we were little, we came. But yeah. So we had to do stuff like that. But also, for me and my sister, we traveled. I know Stefan talked about it somewhat. It was called the Straightway Team. So we were gone mm-hmm. half the mm-hmm. time. We would be gone for a month, like a month at a time, traveling and all over Texas, going into schools and doing drug, they called them drug prevention assemblies, which a lot of schools in Texas have these things called like DARE programs or like, there are like hour long programs that all the kids go to. So we like did like dancing and singing and drama and comedy and just all kinds of stuff. We traveled a lot too, doing this kind of stuff. I was a dancer. My sister was a dancer okay. and a singer. And it sounds really cheesy to talk about now because it was so long ago, but that's, I mean, I did this for 10 years.
Yeah. Yeah.
And there was 6-7 of us girls who all traveled together and for like almost nine to 10 years who were also dancers and other singers and stuff. So that was part of the what we did. At one point, I remember, like, I will never forget when we actually started getting paid and we were like, I'm getting $50 a week. Whoa, oh my gosh.
Yeah, that must feel rewarding, though, after all the time and effort you're putting into these things.
And we got nothing, and it was, like, just to the service of God. Thank you, baby Jesus.
Oh, it must be, you know, because it's not easy touring, especially going into schools. It's exhausting working with children, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, we didn't just, like, we were performing for all ages, elementary through college level, doing, like, church services. But, yeah, it did get exhausting. I mean, What really sucked about that was we would do 4 or 5 shows a day and they were charging like a certain amount per assembly. But I think it was like $400 or $500 per assembly. It may have been more than that, but mm-hmm. we didn't see any of that money.
Yeah.
All that money went back into back into the church or program. And like, we didn't see any of it, but we were doing all the work for it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think the guy, I think the guy that was the leader of the Straightway Team, who this is somebody else, I think he may have been like scamming off the top or something, because he was the one that came up with the prices and like, I'm pretty sure like got the checks and stuff. There was something weird that was happening there.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I don't exactly remember what it was, but I know there was something, but yeah.
What about meditation as well? You mentioned that was a part of some of your church services.
We didn't really do a lot of meditation. There was like, I mean, we had like prayer meetings and mm-hmm. like, I don't think there was a lot of meditation.
No, I think there was just something written in one of your bite model responses about okay. what might happen in church services, and maybe it was chanting, not meditation. Chanting.
Okay, this is kind of funny. Oh, but it's like actually gives me anxiety talking about it, because when I think about it, it scares me. Like, but it's funny though. So they had this thing, it's not meditation, but like we would have these hour-long services on Sundays, just starting at like 10 o'clock to like 3 or 4 o'clock in the afternoon. Wow. Like they would last so long. I think the starting as a little kid, you're like, this is so long and I'm so hungry. Like, but you couldn't eat yet. So they would start with praise and worship and it would lead into like this musical session. And they had this thing called Song of the Lord, which they would put 2 mics. So there's like up at the front, like the praise and worship team, And then they would put two mics, some at the bottom where the congregation is. And like, if you had something on your heart to sing to God, you would come up to the mic and sing whatever it is, just spontaneous mm-hmm. worship. Mm-hmm. So you would sing it out and you had to sing, you couldn't just like speak. And there were times where they made us do it. And I have a horrible voice, like singing voice. And I would be there just like almost in tears, like, oh, I can't get up there. I can't get up there. But like, if you didn't get up there, you were like written up and talked to because you didn't get up and sing the song of the Lord.
Mm-hmm.
And this happened.
When you know that there's things like the paddle and the switch and things like that, I suppose you're a little more susceptible to agreement at that point.
Yeah. I mean, so it was more our parents did that, but when it came to like, I mean, they would bring us, if that case happened where we were like written up, they would bring us into these long hour counseling sessions. We would be brought into 115, they called it. You did not want to go there. And just like confessing your sins, like what you did wrong and what you're going to change. And they would not let you.
Yeah. What if you weren't sure what you've done? So you just confess a load of things. Like I watched Ren and Stimpy on the TV or something like that. You know, what if you confessed to something because you don't know? Or I had an extra bowl of cereal at breakfast. And
yeah, I mean, sometimes there were things that we probably did, but you recognize like we're teenagers who were, most of us were really good. Mm-hmm. And they would just try to use things that were like flirting. If I flirted with a boy, oh my God, I'm in so much trouble. If I kissed a boy, I'm in so much trouble. And I will never forget the first counseling session they brought me into. I had kissed a boy, my first kiss at 23. Oh. Freaking 23. And a guy that I had been in love with for a couple years. It wasn't like some random dude. And I'm like, he finally kissed me. Oh my goodness. The next morning I got pulled into counseling and I had five other people there that were my friends on top of two like counselors, women counselors, like reaming me over the coals.
What?
And I went until I confessed and cried my eyes out.
At 23?
At 23.
What? That is bizarre. That I would understand if you were like 12, 13, but 23 years old.
Oh, yeah. They tried to like, just anything you associated. And granted, when this first counseling session happened, this was the beginning of me starting to see things, how weird things were. And like a year or two later is when I left. But I went to, so they brought me into like, they brought me into two or three other counseling sessions after this for, I don't remember even what, but just stupid stuff that was like, mm-hmm. And I just fake cried every time so I could get the hell out of there. I did not want to hear their bullshit. And the last counseling session I was in, it really pissed me off because the people that were counseling me were one of the daughters of the pastor who I got really close to, who now she's the current head of the place.
Wow. Okay.
And then one of the elders in the church, which they were freaking having an affair and we all knew it. Like,
no.
It was just like, you're sitting here trying to tell me how to live and you're doing each other. Like,
yeah.
I'm not going to listen to you. I mean, it never like actually came out that they were having an affair, but we all like to this day were like, think that they've been having like a 20 year affair and it's just never talked about. And his wife, his wife is still there and just choosing to stay there.
Oh,
and
gosh.
I'm pretty sure she knows it too.
Under the leadership of this woman now as well.
Yeah.
Quick message from this week's sponsors, Podcorn. This announcement is mostly for all of my fellow podcasters and content creators who tune in. Podcorn are an amazing online service that I have used to independently find sponsorships for my show. Because I'm a small platform that does not see listener numbers like those at the top of the podcast charts, I'm not eligible yet for big brand sponsorship to help build the quality of the show. However, Podcorn means that I can do this for myself. Podcorn is a marketplace connecting podcasters to amazing podcast sponsorship opportunities, such as host-read ads, interview segments, topical discussions, and more. With Podcorn, there is no middleman. Podcasters of all sizes can browse and choose opportunities right on the platform, set their own rates, and collaborate with brands directly without any exclusivities. You never give up any rights to your podcast, and Podcorn is here to support you at every step and ensure that you're protected and compensated for the work that you do for brands. The marketplace mission is to give podcasters transparency, creative freedom, and full control of how and when we monetize. Click the link in my show notes to sign up to Podcorn and start browsing sponsorship opportunities today. That's www.podcorn.com.
So you're encouraged to marry before sexual intercourse and those types of Christian values, but yeah. You're not really encouraged to date. So you can't court anyone.
Yeah. So
how would you ever marry somebody because you can't, I don't know, strange.
It doesn't make a lot of sense. Cause I mean, how can you really get to know somebody? I mean, towards the end, they were kind of letting a couple people date. One of my girlfriends, she actually started dating somebody and got engaged there, who he was the nephew to the main pastor.
Mm-hmm.
So his family, God, they lived in Missouri or something. Anyways, he ended up moving a lot later, to the place.
Mm-hmm.
And so they got engaged there. But yeah, she was one of the only ones. There wasn't a lot more. I mean, my sister, her first husband, they got engaged there, but she married a little bit after we all left.
Okay. Okay.
But it was weird though, because it's like, how can you really, I mean, people may have different views on this, but how can you really get to know somebody and then like not be physical with them? And then like you get married and it's like, what if like something you just are not, like that part of it is just not there. And you're like, I am stuck with this person. Like, great.
Yeah. Somebody said you wouldn't buy a car without test driving it.
Yeah.
So
yeah, true.
You might not be physically, like, imagine marrying somebody or I don't know, or finally getting the blessing from the pastor to date this person. And then the first kiss is just something that's just not, you're just not compatible. And it's most uncomfortable thing anybody, either of you's experienced. Like, it's just making me cringe thinking about it. Like,
oh yeah.
Like, I remember there was like, there's been a few, you know, like high school crushes I've had, and then, you know, kisses at the school disco. And then it's like the worst thing. And it's so uncomfortable. And that was like, and you're 23 and you're like, I'm in love with this person. And you've had this wonderful experience. And then it's just tainted with the memory of you being pulled into the counselor's office and berated by everybody.
Yeah. And the person, they would have never known either. But so we had happened to be out that night. We had went out and had a couple of drinks and stuff. I was out with two other girls, and then me and then him. And one of my girlfriends I was with, she told on me. Like, she freaking told on me. And I was like, dude, what is wrong with you?
Yeah. I mean, was that encouraged, was it, amongst all of you to kind of spy on each other and let the elders know when somebody had done something a little bit shady?
I don't know about necessarily spying, but if you like felt that there was something going on or something wrong, yeah, you definitely went inside something.
Right, right.
To the eldership. I mean, that was like, with all of us, we were supposed to do that. But if we felt like, for instance, the girl that we think that has been having the long affair with the elder, I had weird things for a couple of years. Like, man, I really feel like something is going on, but I felt like I couldn't ever say anything because she was a pastor's daughter. She was the head of so many things,
mm-hmm.
but I knew stuff was off. Like, I just knew.
Yeah. And you mentioned that single parents that lived at Straightway were treated differently to parents that were there together. So I was just wondering if you had any examples of that.
Well, I think the only thing I was referring to that was the whole, like, was the whole disciplining thing, like the way that kids got disciplined. Kids that were in single households definitely got it a lot worse, got spankings a lot worse because they were disciplined by elders in the church. They weren't disciplined by their own mom, you know.
Okay.
That happened with quite a few of them.
And there was some mention of child molestation as well.
Yeah. So during the time that I was actually there, I knew of two people that it happened with. But, you know, we were told just to not say anything and, like, that the eldership is going to take care of it. And, you know, I didn't know how bad it was until recently. I knew that I knew of a few people, but I found out this past year a lot more stories.
Right.
Including Troy.
Mm-hmm.
And he put a long post on our Facebook page, which is like the ex-cult Facebook page.
Yeah.
And when I read it, I just started crying. I just had no idea the extent in how he was like 5 years old.
I know, like, tiny, so tiny.
Yeah. Like my little nephew, I would freaking kill them. Like, I mean, yeah, I got so outraged. I found this out last year. I got so outraged. I called like two of my other friends. Did you see this post? I'm like in tears right now. I had no idea. And I reached out to him like immediately as well. I hadn't really spoken with him in a while. And, you know, I mean, his parents were told the same thing. Like, we're not going to speak of this. We're going to, you know, it's going to be covered under the blood and the eldership will take care of it. And one of the people that was doing some of the molestation was the pastor's son, his oldest son. And he never was like done anything with. He went and joined the military. So he served for a while and then would come back sometimes. And you just like, we knew, a couple of us knew the stuff he was doing, but it was just like never, you just didn't talk about it.
Yeah, and it sounds as if that was the same sort of thing with the pastor's daughter as well, having the affair. It sounds like they're kind of just doing things that are not right and nobody's really calling them out on it.
Yeah. So now what's really sad is now that person, the pastor's son, moved, I think, close to his mom, which is in Vegas, and he apparently like served time for molesting other girls, raping a girl, child pornography, kinds of stuff. And I'm like, what if one parent back then would have spoken up and said, no, we're going to the police.
Something is going to happen.
And like, maybe all those other people wouldn't have been hurt. Like,
yeah, well, I suppose that sounds as if he's kind of grown up in an environment where he feels as if he can do these things without consequence.
Yeah.
And so
there probably was some consequences at the time, like with the eldership coming down on him, but it was nothing to the extent of like, we need to go to the police.
Yeah.
And at the time, some of the people that he did it to, I believe he was under 18. So I don't know how much he would have. Yeah.
But at least even being taken to a police station and interviewed and those kind of formal precautions show you that you're not untouchable. And if you don't have those experiences and you just have a couple of elders and, you know, maybe your father saying you can't do that because it looks bad for the church or it looks bad for, you know, the leaders or the family, the family that are in charge of everything, then it's just like another a kid pushing their boundaries, really, isn't it? And you mentioned briefly there your Facebook group as well. So is this a support group for people that have lived at Straightway?
So basically, one of the members that left, she just started this page and she put like X, like the name of the page is like X. And they just put, so the actual place itself has been called several things. When my family moved there, it was FLTC, Family Life Training Center. So like they put like X. So basically, it's just we all kind of found each other. And a lot of people have reconnected. A lot of people have like told their own story. So think about like when I was there for 15 years, there were so many people that left, and we were told so many lies to that it's like, okay, that person left because they were in sin and whatever the sin they did. So we just we believed it. So like actually hearing their stories on this page and like what actually happened, it's like, oh my goodness. Like I had no idea. I had no idea your sons were going through this. I had no idea your family was going through this. Like, so I will say the page has like really helped just within like seeing everybody's perspective on things and how they actually left and how like what has really gone on now in their lives and all that. So
Absolutely, absolutely. And I think anybody that's maybe anybody that's thinking of going there and can track down these types of pages as well and read the types of things that happen, it could be a good deterrent for somebody thinking about going along and joining the program. So what prompted you to actually leave? Was it something that you, your sister, and your parents did together, or did you make that move on your own?
So my dad was pretty much already gone. He had moved to Singapore and had another family. They weren't fully divorced yet. But so he was like in and out of the church. So it was me, my sister, and my mom there. My mom was still super dedicated to it and still believed all their crap they were saying. But me and my sister kind of around that we left around the same time. So, like I said, there were like several things. So when you're in this kind of environment, it usually isn't just like one thing that happened. You're like, I'm out. It's usually like a lot of little things, and that's what it was for me. There was just one thing after the next. I was like, man, this is just getting weird. Like, so the co-pastor, Stefan's dad, his oldest son, who is Stefan's older brother, we got pretty close at one point. We became pretty good friends. And I will never forget, he started telling me all this stuff that was going on. Like, this person's having an affair. And because they knew all like the dirty secrets. They were like the kids of like, you know. And I was like, that's not true. Like the big thing there was love believes the best. That's just not true. That person is not doing that. So, you know, an affair in itself or stuff like that's to each their own. And people are gonna mess up and screw up in life. I definitely have had my own share. In need of the grace of God. So I understand messing up. But when you are doing all this stuff and saying, follow me as I follow Christ, and telling everybody else, like, no, but yet I'm doing all this other side stuff. Well, like, and so I started hearing all this stuff, which ended up pretty much being true. And then they were dragging me into all these counseling sessions, which I spoke about earlier. And I was just getting fed up. I was like, I can't. And you know, I was like, man, I really just feel like God is calling me somewhere else, and I just want to even just go to a different church. It's not even like I was trying to like, oh, and when you leave, you have to leave like in the right way with the blessing of God. And if you don't, you are out of the covering of God, which means your life will be ruined. Like you will just be you're disowned. Nobody speaks with you. So,
And
friends.
it's interesting that an earthly being can make that decision for you on whether you're allowed to be religious or not.
Yeah. And like and like basically your life will be crap if you do not do what they say. So, yeah, so people when I was still there and fully into it, people that would leave in the bad way, you were not allowed to speak to them. Some people moved into the next town over. You would see them at Walmart, HEB. You could not speak to them. Hi, hey, how's it going? You weren't allowed to hang out with them. And there were two of my friends who I grew up with next door. We weren't allowed to speak to each other. And it like crushed me. I'm like, this person is like my sister who came over every day, had cookies and tea with me. Like, you know? So when I was getting to the point of thinking about all this stuff, I actually tried to leave in the right way. Like mm-hmm. I was really trying, and I was like, man, because I had friendships there still that I had gotten close to so many people, and that's all you knew. Like that's just your whole life. You don't know anything else.
Mm-hmm.
And so I tried talking to the pastor and his daughter, and they just kept like shooing me off. It was like, oh yeah, well, and my thing that I was telling them was, I just want to go to a different church. I just want to like experience. And at the time, I think I even really wanted to do like missionary work and go over to Europe and do like, I don't know, just something that was like outside of that.
Explore.
Realm.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it was just like, they wouldn't give me the time of day. Oh, but at this same time, one of his sons, sponsored him to go to South Africa so he could do his, you know, what he needed to do.
Right. Like, okay.
But yet he was smoking pot the whole time. So that's okay though. But I just want to, go to a different church, but I'm reamed over the Coles. So in this process, I mean, this was like 6 months to a year process where I'm just like, I literally am just like praying all the time. Like, God, what should I do? I really feel like there's more out there, but I don't want to lose these friendships. And I know it's about to happen. If I leave, I will lose everybody.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to think of what, like, so like all the affairs that were going on top of like at that moment, I wasn't even thinking about, oh, people have been like sexually assaulted here either. Like I forgot about that. And then I was like, well, there's that. Like,
yeah. Yeah.
And I think the final thing, this probably doesn't even sound like a big deal, but I think it just finally all got to me was the person that my sister was about to marry at the time, like mm-hmm. I said, he was like the right hand of the pastor. They basically were trying to put me against them and like trying to find out any information
right.
about them
yeah.
because they were
yeah.
also thinking about moving, about leaving, but they were also moving in back into Houston. They
right.
both were getting jobs. And I like at the time I was waiting tables at Chili's. Oh, I was so embarrassed. So I'm like in the middle of working, waiting tables, and I get a call. Somebody, like one of the managers comes over, is like, hey, there's a call for you. It's so-and-so. I'm like, it's the pastor, like on the line. I'm like, why is he calling me at work? Holy crap. So he's like, hey, we need you to come over tonight. You know, we have some questions about your sister and the soon-to-be. And I'm like, okay. In fact, I was still in the mindset of like, you did whatever they said.
Yeah.
Even though I was thinking about leaving, I still like was in the mindset of like, you had to do what they said. So I went over there, spoke with them, and they were trying to get like all the information out of like what's going on with them. And they pretty much tried to turn me against them. And then my mom, there was a moment with my mom where she was trying to say stuff, and I lost it. I started yelling. I was like, it is one thing with like all this other stuff, but don't come between me and my sister.
Mm-hmm.
Like we've been through too much crap in our lives. Do not come between us. And if this is either, you know, either staying here and having my friendships or having my family, like, hell no, I will choose my family. Like, so, wasn't too long after that, after several counseling sessions, I was given 2 weeks. Granted, I had nowhere to go. Anything. I was given 2 weeks to get out. They made my mother kick me out. And I don't even think like I was allowed to get all my stuff, but I had to get out in
wow.
like 2 weeks. And thankfully it was a horrible, I lost all my friendships there. Nobody spoke to me. But thankfully, thank God, when I left, there was about 15 to 20 of us that left around the same time.
Okay.
So, yeah. So there was, and there were two other girls that left before I did. So we like all reconnected, all just like.
Amazing.
Yeah. So, I mean, it was just, you know, there were so many reasons I left, but basically that was it. And it just became so mind controlling in mind where you're just like constantly like, and we were all like really good kids, and like, you know, and they like tried to tell us how horribly we were all the time. And oh, okay, so this isn't just side note, but I can't believe so we had to freaking babysit their kids. Is that okay? Very perfect. We had to babysit their freaking kids, right? And some of them had like 10 kids, and we didn't get paid, and we weren't allowed to get paid. So we would go over, watch their kids, whoever, it was usually like the elderships in the church or right. deacons in the church. And while you were over there, you had to clean too. And we, you know, we weren't getting paid anything, but like, if we said no, like if we said, oh, you know what? I really can't, I'm doing schoolwork. That's my excuse. I'm doing schoolwork. We got rained over the coals because we did not, we're not serving enough. We're not being like so-and-so and serving enough in the church.
Yeah, but you're not serving God then, are you? You're not.
No.
I was going to mention as well.
Me and my sister were like some of the worst because we said no a couple times. And it was like, y'all are in sin. And then, yeah. And so like one person who we would babysit for, he had two little girls who were just the sweetest little girls. He actually tried to pay us, but we weren't supposed to say no. So we said no, but he was so nice and like put the money under our door to where we Aww. Still got it. I was like, I freaking loved him.
That's sweet. That's sweet. Yeah. And good for him because you do deserve to be paid after, you know, looking after other people's children, you know, especially if there's 10 of them and you're expected to clean.
And we had to clean. We couldn't just be like taking care of the kids. We had to be cleaning too. There was this one time where my sister and I were watching the, so the oldest pastor's daughter had two kids who we basically raised, like, because they lived right next door to us, and I had to go over there every Sunday and get their kids ready because she was a praise and worship leader. So I had to go get their kids ready. Oh, why her husband drove an hour away to go get Starbucks coffee because it was like an hour away. He couldn't get his own kids ready. So we had to get the kids ready. I had to watch them like the whole service. Anyways, there was this one time where they were out. I don't remember what they were doing, but we were watching the kids. And because we didn't do like the dishes and a bunch of cleaning, we got pulled into counseling and reamed over the coals because we were not serving enough.
That is ridiculous. That and another double standard you mentioned before was how one of the eldest sons would spend the entire summer smoking pot. But it's my understanding that in this place of rehabilitation, from what Stefan and Troy have told me, the elders are all getting drunk anyway, so they're not removing alcohol they're not removing temptation. They're as time goes on, it's almost as if the ego progresses and progresses and progresses, and the guy running the show, the guy in charge, is like, well, I'm gonna drink, I'm gonna have alcohol, here's alcohol for the elders.
Yeah, that's okay. So they did not have alcohol on the premises, like, or anything for the longest time. And I think I mentioned it a little bit earlier. They found something called the freedom of the spirit, meaning we were allowed to start drinking because in the Bible it says Jesus turned water into wine. So people started drinking. But to my knowledge, I thought people were just drinking wine. I'm like, oh, we're allowed to drink wine. That's cool. Okay. And then people, I found out somebody was drinking beer, and I was like, oh, man. Somebody's drinking beer. And then it moved on from there to where people, like, you know, were drinking and stuff, and that was okay to do, which I drink myself now. I have no problem with that. But you are on a campus that is a rehab program. These students, part of their job was to come around. So the trailers that are around the campus, we would have like these big trash cans outside where we put our trash in. And there was like dumpsters like down the way. So part of some of the students' job was to like come around and get all the trash. I mean, some people had like, you know, like alcohol, beer, wine bottles, whatever in there. And they had to clean it up. I'm like, look back now and I'm like, these poor people who are going through this program, and there's just like, yeah.
clearing up after other people's alcohol when probably all they want is alcohol. Yeah, that's got to be difficult. That's got to be hard. And so, you mentioned briefly there something about prison worship outreach as well. So Steph had talked a little bit about this. There was actually a group who would go to prisons and preach and run services and run things like that.
That was a little, yes, they did that. A little bit before my time, I believe, but I remember as a little kid, like knowing that they went into prisons and did like ministry. That's so one of my friends, the one I was talking about earlier, who I grew up with, her mom was in prison, and that's how she came to the place or to the cult. They had went there to do like a prison ministry session, and she was there. And so there were like a few other people like who came from that who were in prison and stuff and ended up coming there. Yeah, there was like several different ministries outside of the actual church and stuff. So
once you decided to finally make the choice to leave and your sister was not too far behind you, I mean, did your mom ever leave? Is she still there?
It took her like 3 or 4 years to leave. Wow, okay. Our relationship with her was nothing. It became nothing with like me, like she didn't talk to us. You know, she just still believed everything they said.
Yeah.
And there were lies. I found out later that there were lies told about me. I was like, that wasn't even true. Holy crap. I kind of wish that was true, but it really wasn't. But I mean, you know, I wasn't the only person. There were so many other people that like lies were told about. But yeah, I don't know exactly what they told my mom or what, but she didn't talk to us for quite a while. And she finally left, thank God. And is, I think just now coming to the terms that the place is really messed up and it has taken her a long time.
Yeah. And I suppose it's been nice for you to have your sister to speak to about all of these experiences. Do you ever just remember something one day and like phone her up and go, oh my goodness, do you remember when this happened?
Oh yeah. Yeah. Like there might be like funny things or like things that were just horrible. She actually like has just blocked some stuff out because I'll be like, do you remember this? And she's like, what? No. I'm like, yeah, this happened. Yeah, so I mean, thank God we have the group of girls that we do and that we're still in communication because we've all been through kind of the same thing.
Yeah. Stuff, so. And what has your life been like since? Do you still have a relationship with Christianity in any way?
I do somewhat. I mean, when I first left, and my mentality was just like, if this is what Christianity is like, I want nothing to do with it. I was so just devastated and heartbroken and just couldn't believe my friendships were all done. And it was just such a, it took a little bit of time, but I kind of started going to this church again. That's not too far from us. And, you know, it's weird because I do like to go, but it's really hard for me to actually get involved. I feel like I can't. Like it's just too many emotions. It's too like I don't even really want to give money. Like it's hard for me to even give money because I'm just my mentality just goes to one place. And I know that all churches and all Christians are that was a very different upbringing and that not everybody's like that. But it still can be difficult. But yeah, my life has gotten, it was the most difficult and best decision I ever made leaving. I can't imagine if I was still there. I would probably just still be this like insecure little girl who couldn't move on or something. But.
And religion aside, what has your life been like other than that? Are you fulfilled and feel like, you know, apart from being uncomfortable in church services and stuff, have you been able to recover from your experiences here and build relationships and speak to other people who have also gone through the same situation.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like I've, for the most part, have like gotten over everything. I mean, like I said, every once in a while, there might be something that comes up and it might trigger something. But, you know, one thing that I've really tried to do is forgive these people that have done these things, because it's only hurting yourself if you hold on to this resentment and stuff. And I mean, I've even like written letters and stuff. I've never given them to them, but like I've written like letters just like, you know, I forgive you, even though you probably still don't, you probably still think one way. And there, what's really sad is there are people that are still there that really have good hearts, and their minds are just so messed up and brainwashed from this place that they still believe in it. And so, yeah, I just like, I've tried to move on, and I actually don't even think about it too much anymore, unless there's something that is brought up. But yeah, I mean, my life, I have been working since the age of 13. I waited tables for like 10 years of my life. That was definitely interesting. Have a lot of stories about that. I've dated, I work in a corporate environment now for like the past 5 years. Like I said at the beginning, in the process of moving to Austin, Texas, which is about 3 hours from Austin. So yeah, life is good. I mean, like anybody, there's been down times, horrible times, good times. But, and I will say this, like, you know, going through, I don't regret anything that we've been through. I mean, like a bunch of us went through it together.
Yeah.
But it's made me who I am, and like, you know, really recognize that everybody goes through stuff in life, and to be more gracious towards people and like more understanding. And so.
So you managed to go away and explore all parts of the world and have kind of worldly experiences and do a little bit of the stuff you wanted to do when you originally were asking to leave.
I don't know about traveling. I haven't been able to travel a lot, but I mean, like within the United States, but I haven't been back to Europe since I was at the place. But yeah, I mean, I definitely have lived a life that I would have never been able to live if I was still there. Like they're just, yeah.
Well, I guess before we finish, Syria, my last question for you, unless you have anything to add really, is to ask you what advice you would give to people who have maybe been in similar situations where they've been spiritually abused or experienced other types of abuse, and are, you know, maybe struggling to hold on to their beliefs, or are struggling to just readjust outside of their group or movement to everyday life.
I think the main thing is, like, you know, do what's right for you. If you are feeling uncomfortable in a situation, in a church or any kind of spiritual, whatever it may be, I mean, do what's right for you and get out. It was the best decision I made. And then it's going to be so hard at first, but it gets better. And to not be, you know, there and like maybe find a group of people that you can connect with. I mean, I would say go to therapy if you can. I would so go to therapy myself, but I can't afford it. It's expensive. But if you can go to therapy, do. If you can even like find friendships to where like people encourage you and like get into a group where you, I don't know, little things like just like being active and people are encouraging. Yeah, I mean, that's basically it. All I could say is if you think you need to get out, get the hell out. If it's getting in a situation where you're like, it's getting weird, and I don't think things are right, and you have a feeling in your gut, just get out. But also, you know, there's like so much more to life than just the one scenario or the one relationship or the one church or the one whatever it may be. Everybody has a different, maybe you're not a Christian and don't believe in God, that's it, to each their own, but whatever situation you're in, there is more to life than just that. And I know a lot of people think that there isn't, and that you maybe get stuck into a situation, but there is light at the end of the tunnel. That sounds really cheesy, but there is. So I think that's about it.
Yeah. Well, I think that's, you know, what you said there about therapy, it's something that's come up a few times on the podcast when people have spoken about what's helped them to recover. But also what you've said about being able to change your own narrative, you know, just because you're on a certain path at the moment doesn't mean that's the one you have to stay on. So, I think Troy was a perfect example of that yesterday when he spoke about the types of abuse that he'd experienced, but that he had such a positive outlook now on life, and that he'd managed to, you know, leave so much of that anger and upset behind and find something positive on the other side of it. And you know, you've laughed through the uncomfortable parts of this interview, so I think you've kind of given off that same sort of vibe, that there's been difficult experiences and there's been difficult things that you've gone through, but you're able to speak about them and you're able to reflect on them in a way that is not controlling your life. You know, you said that you find some church services uncomfortable. I think that's conditioning. I think anybody would be exactly the same in your situation, especially when you're worried about the money going to people to buy them their alcohol.
And I know that's not the case. Like every time, like I've given, like, like for instance, if they say, oh, this is going towards this missionary trip, or this, like, to help people in Africa with this water or whatever, I'm like, hip, yeah, let's go. But just giving like regular tithe and offering, it's a little difficult.
Yeah. And I think that's completely understandable. You know, you grew up in a situation where you could see that people's money was kind of, maybe there was financial exploitation and it was happening sort of in front of everybody's faces, especially when you're building the pastor a nice big house and things like that. So I really appreciate your time today, Syria. Thank you so much for coming and sharing your story with me.
Yes. It's finally good to connect. We've been emailing back and forth. And yes, hope maybe can do it again. Maybe can have, do you have ever have more than one person on?
Yeah, I have done that a few times. And I think it'd be really interesting to sit here and have like a round table discussion where some of you get together and I get to sit here and be sort of like a fly on the wall and listen to you all discuss your experiences and stuff.
Yeah. So my friend who I kind of spoke, I didn't say her name, but I kind of spoke about her a couple of times. She would be really good to like have with me. Like, I mean, we're like sisters and she is hilarious. But yeah, I have a few people that would be good.
So. Yeah. And I mean, it's something that you can offer out to the Facebook group as well, if there's ever the opportunity to do that. So, yeah, I'm sure people would love to have you back on the show and come and speak to us again. So thank you so much, Syria. And I really hope you enjoy the rest of your day.
Yes, you as well. Thank you.
Thank you. Take care. Bye.
Bye.
That is the end of this week's episode. If you'd like to get in touch, you can email me at cultvaultpodcast@gmail.com or find me on Twitter and Instagram at cultvaultpod. As I mentioned at the start of the episode, if you do have a spare minute today, then please do visit the britishpodcastawards.com/votes to nominate the Cult Vault for the Listener's Choice Awards. I'm your speaker, Casey, and this has been the Cult Vault.